Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
And now, dear listeners, the much-promised threesome. I have invited my colleagues Makoni Maja and Marius Root into the studio and online to talk about a very interesting meeting they had with the South African Human Rights Commission. Makoni, welcome. And can I just ask you to give a brief resume of what the of what led to this meeting? We talked about it recently on the show, but just to give us some background.
Of course. Good morning, Sarah, and good morning to all the Hi FM listeners. So our question to the HRC was really about the institutions of race. As we know them, South Africa's had a very long relationship with those institutions. They were crafted out of apartheid and manipulated then to create and enable discrimination of various groups of people. As they were separated by race. Those institutions, specifically the legal ones, when we look at legal framework, such as the Population Registration Act, the Group Areas Act, where these race categories were really created and where they emerged, were repealed in the 90s. And yet so much of South Africa's Acts of Parliament today remain racialized and continue to administer treatment on different people according to their race. So our question to the Human Rights Commission is really a legal one, and it's about, should the government in post-apartheid democratic South Africa still dictate to people what race they can and cannot identify as? And if so, if they should, what is their basis, since we repealed racial categories and the laws that established and founded them? So our question really goes to the legal relationship one has with the race and their government specifically, rather than a cultural or social one. So culturally or socially, people should be able to identify as whatever, but obviously the government does not necessarily allow that. So you, for example, would have a very tough time in South Africa ticking the African box if you were, say, to apply for a job. And we want to understand what is the legal basis for that, because we no longer have institutionalized racial categories. They are not founded in law. So where does the government get the authority to enforce them?
So much to, I think, everyone's surprise, because we often write letters asking questions of institutions, both public and private, to account for certain behaviors or attitudes. They actually responded to your letter. It took a little while, but they responded to your letter and then followed up requesting a meeting. And so it eventually came to pass. Marius, what was your impression? Who was in the meeting? And what was your sense of what their feelings about what we had challenged them over?
Hello, Makone, and hello to your listeners. There was Professor Chepo Malingozi, who's one of the commissioners at the Human Rights Commission. He led the meeting, and then three of his colleagues, two researchers, and then sort of his chief of staff, I would guess you'd call that the guy. And I have to say, I thought the meeting was... We had a good discussion, I think. I don't think we agreed on everything, but I do think there were some common points of interest there. And I know Chepo Malingozi, he's been criticized for some of his views. He's a decolonialist guy, or decoloniality scholar. So he's, you know, he's quite skeptical in his academic work of Western institutions. I think you could say, Makone couldn't correct me, but after, I do think he was very personable. He was very willing to listen to what we were saying. And I think that's one of the issues in South Africa, is that people who disagree on certain things don't always come together and talk to each other. Doesn't mean that you have to agree with the other person after you've had a discussion, but I think it's very important to have a chat and hear what other people think about things, and just find out where they come from and how they've developed their views. Because I think often in South Africa, we just think somebody disagrees with you and you think, oh, they must be a mad communist, or the racist, or they're stupid, or whatever the case is. And often people get get their views for complex reasons. And I think it's one of the things we do lack in South Africa, as I say, is sometimes we just don't talk to each other. But overall, I do think we had a good chat with the Human Rights Commission. We don't necessarily agree with all their views. They probably don't necessarily agree with everything that we said. But I think it's important to have this conversation. And I think it's an important question. If you can't define what a black African person is or what a white person is legally, then how can you expect people to get certain benefits from the government on that basis?
Mm. McConnell, can I ask you, what essentially was their opinion legally on using racial classification?
Yeah, so we've decided, just out of respect for the HRC, to only make public that the statements they themselves have publicized on the issue. And luckily, in their response to us, they decided to publish elements of that. So I can definitely speak on some of those items. I think one of the critical statements that were made in their response was that self-classification should be a governing principle in determining one's race. So ultimately, you should decide, and it should be an individual's prerogative, not the government's, which we found to be a massive breakthrough in this field, because that means that the government loses all power to enforce racial classification. They went on to speak about why we have these categories to begin with, and something that Marius constantly highlights when we enter spaces where we have to discuss this issue is that these racial classifications were there to measure apartheid affirmative action or redress measures, and to also assess progress. Have we made sufficient progress since apartheid to relinquish things like BEE? Have we made sufficient progress in eradicating poverty specifically of Black people? And that is the position that the SHRC took, even invoking Section 9 of the Constitution as being supportive of that view. And also speaking of the UN, the United Nations, and saying that they have been concerned, the UN has been concerned by the lack of disaggregated data to support or to provide evidence that these measures have indeed worked, or just to assess the impact of those measures. So I think that the issue that they specifically honed in on was that of self-determining your race. Which then we asked them, what do they have to say about the Commission of Employment Equity and its deployment of those 20,000 race police? I mean, they call them race inspectors, but they're effectively the police. Mm. They're there to make sure that you tick the box that the government sees you as. And so that kind of circumvents that principle of self-classification and self-identification. And to that, Prof. Martin Ngozi actually said he would escalate the issue, which is what we wanted out of the meeting. One of the things we wanted out of the meeting is access to those government departments like the Home Affairs or Department of Education or Department of Labor to really apply pressure there, because that's where these race classifications are upheld. Self-classification is the one thing that I think we can all agree on as being how we should proceed with this race issue. But again, that means jettisoning with the government's role, because the government does not then get to decide that you cannot actually self-determine your race.
So that's quite an interesting inflection point, because it does put the commission in a much more amenable space, shall we say, than most of the government departments who have to enact a lot of these regulations, etc. Maurice, what did you say to the commission representatives regarding what the IRR would recommend doing in order to determine how to best uplift people?
Well, we suggested our policy that we think should replace BE. It's something we've been pushing for a while now. It's called economic empowerment for the disadvantaged. And it would also be a form of redress, but would look at people's actual disadvantage rather than just their race. Because obviously in South Africa today, the majority of disadvantaged people are still Black South Africans. But not all Black South Africans are disadvantaged or live in poverty. Poverty is a phenomenon that affects all races. Of course, as I say, black South Africans are affected far more than white South Africans, and to a lesser degree, colored and Indian South Africans. But we should be looking at ways to empower people who are living in poverty. We shouldn't be looking at race simply. We shouldn't just be using race as the only proxy. And we know in South Africa today there are black South Africans who are doing very well. They don't need any help from the government. We all know whether they're people who, you know, President Ramaphosa's son, or just people who, you know, firmly established in the middle class now, you know, people who are able to live in a decent home and own, you know, a car or two and be able to go on holiday once a year and send their children to decent schools and what have you, and just people who be able to, who are able to reach their potential. And one of the ways to do that is to have economic growth and to create jobs and so on. And that's one of the problems we have in South Africa. We, if we really want to make a dent in poverty in South Africa, and as I say, poverty affects black South Africans mainly, is through economic growth. And that's also another pillar that the Institute of Race Relations has been punting, that for South Africa to become a country where to that where everybody can reach its potential, the only way is through rapid economic growth. And at the moment, the policies we do have in place simply won't allow the country to be able to do that.
Mario, I would think that that would resonate with an organization like the Human Rights Commission, because the emphasis is on poverty and the majority of the population. How did they respond to that idea, and what were their comments, if any, on the fact that BEE, by its nature, does not address poverty in any significant sense, nor large numbers of people's need to get out of poverty?
That wasn't really a main topic of discussion in the meeting, but they did seem fairly amenable to that view. As I said, it wasn't a meeting where we came and we didn't face a brick wall. They were willing to listen, and I do think my colleague can agree or disagree. I do think they were willing to listen to other ways of doing things and of getting South Africa to actually get growing and to be able to start making a dent in things like poverty and unemployment.
Makona, what was your sense of the meeting in that respect?
The same as Marius. They were very open. There were no hostilities, hardly any, except around obviously things that we don't agree with, but that wasn't necessarily hostile. It was just areas where we have to drill into what motivates our views on these different subjects. But the poverty thing came up insofar as addressing whether the measures we've used have really ameliorated Black people from poverty. And one of the things the commission mentioned is that in their report about the July riots of 2021, they similarly expressed their concern with the rate of poverty, many, almost 30 years then, certainly 30 years now after apartheid had ended. Mm-hmm. So the issue of poverty and our concern for alleviating it and addressing it was one that we very much shared in common. It became quickly evident that this is an organization and a group of people that deeply care about ensuring that we achieve a flourishing and prosperous South Africa. Mm. And once you have those things in common, it's very easy to proceed, even when you don't agree. Mm. So yeah, those areas we shared in common really enabled the discussion to move in the right direction.
And was any, if it, to the extent that BEE as it exists was defended, any reference to it there being a timeline or a sunset clause option by which BEE should end, even though personally I think, you know, how do you determine such a thing? It's really not, to my mind, a solution.
Yeah, that's one of those views I'm hoping the Human Rights Commission can make public before we can speak on it. What they did highlight was the issue of achieving substantive equality. And I'm not necessarily that's the date or that would be the indicator when racial or racialized redress measures should end, but they were definitely concerned with achieving equality. There's very little I can say on this until they've.
What strikes me, Marius, is, and it's a breath of fresh air because our politics is generally devoid of this, and that is that essentially a contentious topic was discussed politely and respectfully without either party necessarily conceding to the other party, but being prepared to listen. So in other words, for the once, and you don't see it often, and not here, not anywhere else, and the American election is probably a good example of it, everyone behaved like they were adults in the room. And part of my reason for discussing this topic was less for the substance of what happened than for the fact that it's probably an example, and I'll ask McConaughey about an aspect of it, but the fact that you may have very divergent ideological or political views, but shouting past each other and screaming and threatening each other in any context on any issue that may be at conflict achieves virtually nothing. This is the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely with you. And after I was a little bit anxious going into that meeting because I was worried about exactly that type of thing. But as I say, I thought Professor Madeleine Gauzy was very personable. You know, as I said, him and his colleagues were willing to listen. I could see on some points they disagreed with us, but they, you know, didn't shout at us and tell us to keep quiet. They were willing to listen, and I think they would probably say this in Kone. We listen to their views. And yeah, I think it is something that we've lost. You know, maybe it's also everybody always believes that politicians were better 30 or 40 years ago. And maybe it was exactly the same case, you know, in the past. But it does feel like people are a bit more ruder these days, you know, whether it's your politicians. Because of things like social media and the internet, you need to get clickbait. You know, people aren't going to really want to read an article about two politicians being polite to each other and, you know, having a nice discussion. They want to read about where they swore at each other and, you know, one stormed out of, you know, out of the meeting or whatever the case is. That's part of it. But yeah, I do think it's something we need more of, you know, as you pointed out with not just in South Africa, in the American election too. There does seem to be a much nastier streak in the campaigning than has been in the past. But as I say, that's also maybe just, you know, people always think that things were better when they were a little bit younger. So maybe that's it. But I do think, we do need more. There has to be, the only way we can get to solutions is to have proper discussions with each other, and where we treat each other as adults and, you know, are willing to listen properly.
Mm. Finally, McConaughey, I'd just like to ask you, because I was, you know, we are known, I mean, as a think tank, we are often critical, particularly of government in politics and the attempts to redress social ills. But following the meeting, you actually issued a press release welcoming the engagement and essentially casting a positive light on the engagement and giving you an opportunity to set out our position again. What for you is a particular value in that sort of press release in light of our more common searching, probing press releases?
Yeah, so I think just that issue you were discussing about how we're having very difficult, contentious discussions and them not being productive, it was important that we come back to the public, especially after we had also put out press releases at the time the human rights wasn't responding, just taking the public into confidence. Mm-hmm. It was important that we then go back to the public and say, not only did we have the meeting, but it was very productive, it was very fruitful discussion. And that Parliament does not actually represent how these conversations are being had in ordinary South African life, despite the fact that we're two organizations who typically take very completely different approaches to these subjects, but also that racial classification is a personal thing to South Africans. Race is a very personal thing. So we wanted to bring them again in on the ride and in on matters of their identity, essentially bring this topic and this discussion to them and broadcast it to the extent that we could. So one is to really provide an example or a model of what conflict resolution or even contentious debates can look like. And then to, again, bring the issue of your identity to you and to invite you into that discussion, to get the South African, ordinary South Africans, the opportunity to engage on these issues, which they did. We get written to whenever we put these press releases out, and I certainly did. I think this is the campaign where I've been written to the most by ordinary people and people from different organizations. So yeah, it's been a very successful campaign on our end.
Well, there's a great deal of merit in giving credit where credit is due. Tony and Marius, thank you very much for joining us today and having our first threesome.